Welcome to the Get Together.
All over the world, there are people thinking about and creating a future of live digital events and performances.
They're disparate innovators who are artists, tech founders, nonprofits, and investors, and they need a place to gather and share ideas.
That's what the Get Together is all about.
I'm Jess, a theater creator who loves bringing people together around technology, art, and the internet.
And I'm Joe, a tech and media startup vet with over 10 years of experience growing and operating businesses.
Thanks for getting together with us. Let's dig in. Happy Wednesday. It's Wednesday, everyone.
Wednesday.
Is it Wednesday in your world?
Is it Wednesday the day this podcast comes out?
No.
Definitely not.
No. Sweet, sweet Thursdays. How's everybody doing? How is this Wednesday for you, Joe?
Wednesday. It's a good day. I had a whole chunk of time to just like let my brain sort of flow forward on a whole bunch of projects.
Nice.
I feel like every once in a while, the sort of task switching that comes with having lots of meetings, right? Mm. You spend 30 minutes here, hard shift to something else, is just draining and kind of exhausting. Mm. And the past 2 days were pretty busy. We were bouncing all around, had some fun in-person things.
Truth.
So it's nice to have a little bit of a mellow day.
Nice.
How about you?
Well, you know, I'm going on a taco boat tonight, so I don't know how anything could be any better.
Boat tacos.
Boat tacos on the taco boat. This is just a very fast aside for anyone who listens who's a theater person. But so Kate Carrigan, amazing musical theater writer, recommended I read this book called Trust Exercise by Susan Choi. Have you read that?
No, I have not.
It's a great book. It's about theater. Well, it's not about theater. It's about sexual assault and power and like craziness, but all in the context of theater, like a high school theater department. And that's all I'm going to say about it. It's really, really good. But
is it a novel?
A fiction, nonfiction? Yeah, it's fiction. And it was, you know, like a big deal when it came out and all that stuff. I'm just like a little late to it. Never heard about it. Anyway, it kind of delves into, have we ever talked about Meisner before?
Maybe. It like feels familiar. It feels like a path we've walked down on this podcast before, but I couldn't repeat it back to you. So let's pretend I have no idea what it is, because
well,
I have no idea.
Speaking of repeating it back to you, you have blue eyes.
Accurate.
You have blue eyes.
Still accurate.
You have blue eyes.
Cool.
You have blue eyes.
Is this Meisner?
Yes. So Meisner is this fucking motherfucking training method that I think I had 2 full years of in college. And it starts with just having to like sit like we are making mm-hmm. this podcast, look at each other, and you observe something about the other person and you say it, and then you have to respond it back. You have to respond back to me. And it's all about like having honesty and not, and like really seeing your blue eyes, if that's the thing I noticed, and you hearing that you have blue eyes and telling me you have blue eyes, which like sounds cute. And if you, it is like torture.
It sounds really terrible.
It is a torturous training system. And it then moves into like trying to break people down and a lot of crying. Oh God, it's so abusive in my opinion. And very frequently the theater instructors who love Meisner are men, and they are, can be abusive in their wielding
They're
of
also
Meisner.
Libertarians and fans of Atlas Shrugged and Ayn Rand generally.
I like Atlas Shrugged.
Cool.
Anyway.
You and the white power bros.
Yeah, that's us. Anyway, trust exercise sort of like really examines that those power structures that are embedded in like theater communities, young theater communities, in a way that just was like really upsetting, but like really true and really reflective of my experience. And I'm sure other people that are listening. And then I just finished it 2 nights ago. And then last night I watched the latest episode of Barry, which also uses Meisner as the bit for the whole episode. And there's like a fucking interrogation like that uses Meisner. And I was like, I feel so justified that this is such a foolish, ridiculous training mechanism.
It's being like parried it inside of
oh my God.
This television
I
show.
I just nearly lost it. So that's my little wander into theater world for a second. It's great.
That's really fun. And yet Meisner does feel like psychological torture. Like it's funny, it like feels a little bit like some of that stuff I was reading about in the Michael Pollan book about How to Change Your Mind. Where it's like, oh, like pathways that we have, you know, the sort of taking the easiest route just mentally to like lessen the load, the cognitive load for daily existence.
Yeah.
And it feels like Meisner like does similar work of like breaking down those pathways. It's like, it doesn't allow you to just be like, oh yeah, I'm good today. Thanks. Bye. It's like, no, we're like going there. We're going to break into 100%. Whatever's happening in your brain right now.
Yeah. It's, I think what
I like more abusive.
So, yeah. I think what I have mentioned in here that is exactly what you're talking about is like at some point when you get into years two, three, whatever, my fucking 5 days a week, 2 hours a day. I dreaded Meisner. I dreaded it. And I'm not saying it didn't make me a better actor who has more accessible emotions.
But at what cost?
But at a great fucking cost. And one of the exercises you get to a bunch of variations on is choose a high stakes circumstance for yourself and choose a physical expression that you have to perform while under those high stakes. So what I think I've mentioned here is like mine, I will never forget. I made myself write a suicide note with my left hand because I'm right-handed. So that my physical thing was having to try to write left hand in a moment where as an actor, I had decided my high stakes were I've decided to kill myself and wow. I'm leaving a note for everyone. And I can't write it because it's with my left hand. And I just, all I remember is like fucking bawling because the physical, if you do it right and you don't cheat and you don't be a wimp.
Wow. Now you're embodying Meisner. You're like, I suffered this, so everyone else should too. Yeah.
The physical impediment actually breaks down all those pathways because you get more focused on like the physical, trying to overcome the physical. Mm-hmm. You know, people would do sit-ups, like whatever, fuck off, you know what I mean? But
I like yours is like it's both tactile, like it's a reality, right, that like using your opposite hand is hard for many people. But yeah, it's not the trite like I'm gonna do jumping jacks until I pass out.
Yeah.
It's like you thought one layer deeper.
Yeah, well. So yeah, that's all to say 20 years after Meisner, not quite, but almost 20 years later, I got to read Trust Exercise and then watch that episode of Barry and was like, my middle fingers feel vindicated. I am so glad I'm not the only person, or my class is not the only group of humans in the world that think this is a incredibly just, I don't have the words for it, training method for actors.
Do they still use it? Like, is MSU right now?
I don't know.
It depends breaking young minds.
It depends on whoever the teacher is, right? If someone was, trained in Meisner, and you know, we had a teacher who was like trained in biomechanics, which is like a super physical Russian method of actor training. And I trained in Suzuki and viewpoints as a method. So it just depends on your teacher and what they're trained in.
I hope I never have to do that.
Yeah, well, you just did. And you know
That didn't count. It wasn't 2 hours a day.
Yeah, what I love is I hope you watched that episode of Barry because you literally did the same thing Henry Winkler did. That's so good.
All right. I'm going to start Barry just to catch up to this episode.
Oh, you should definitely do it. It's such a good show anyway. So, all right.
Pro tip, hot take, go watch Barry.
Yes. It's so silly and wonderful. You know, today this has zero to do with Meisner, but
we'll connect it.
Yeah, somehow, I'm sure. I've been thinking a bit, and I have some questions for you that I haven't gotten a chance to ask you yet. I've been thinking a lot about how we're discovering by listening and by getting to be in spaces, particularly in the event professionals world, where we're starting to discover, right, that we know the big why for what we do, which is, as you know, if you listen to this, open the doors to, you know, more committed, passionate communities of people for your events, experiences, and let them go wild. And that is a new line of revenue. That is deepening connections, all the things we always say, right? We know the big why of what we do. I think what we've really discovered across the last 6 months or so is that when you start really boiling down to business objectives, we kind of sit in this interesting place between events and marketing as a live digital company and what we do with live digital, right? We do execute events, the digital side of an event, but the way we design the experience, once you follow that line to us, feeds the marketing that comes afterwards, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's this third little circle, which kind of gets us around to a Venn diagram, which conveniently is our logo, of community building, which we've really been immersed in on a particular project we're working in right now, and that sort of community management world. So now we've got like we're part events, we're part of the marketing site, you know, machine, and we're part of the community building machine, and we sit right in the middle of it. And so that's, I just kind of wanted to talk about that today. And like I said, I have a couple of random questions for you about things you've said that I think are really interesting in that frame.
This is my favorite framework for an episode is Jess has questions for Joe. Joe responds off the cuff and hopefully it's okay. Completely and utterly unprepared.
This is
in the best way.
It feels like sweet. Oh yeah. I forgot you don't love that, but it's
what?
Having to come up with stuff on the spot.
Oh yeah. I'm getting better at it. It's good training. This is my Meisner.
You are so good at it. Yeah. I was just going to say it's sweet revenge for the fact that like, that's what I do every time I get on a stage or get interviewed for anything. And you don't do as much of that. So I'm giving it back to you on the podcast.
I'll take it. A nice safe environment that we're in right now.
So you think.
So we think.
It's a trap.
It's been a trap the whole time.
All leading to this minute. So,
all leading.
Do you want to start with the first question, or do you want to talk? This is not. I'll cut this. Or do you want to talk about that sort of Venn a little more?
Yeah, let's talk about the Venn a little bit more, because one of the things that, as you're just describing it and making shapes with your hand, that our dear listeners can't see.
I almost spit out my club soda. They were bad shapes, in case you're curious.
What's a bad shape? All shapes are equal.
Not a circle. Which is what I was describing.
Because I totally agree. Like, those are the three spheres within which we are working. And one is like sort of by design, right? We're like live digital. That's what we want to be doing. We want to be designing these cool experiences to bring people together on the internet and to expand access. Like, hell yeah. Mm-hmm. The marketing element, I think, is like one part just based on the need. Right? Like, people need this. Mm-hmm. It's new enough. It's unproven in many ways. And marketing is closely connected to sales, and sales is closely connected to revenue, and revenue is what makes the world go round. So it's like, oh, like, we're doing a whole bunch. We're connected often to marketing, both on the front side of things that we're doing, right? Helping get people to the thing that we're creating in a live digital world. Mm-hmm. And then marketing more generally after, and like all the data points that come out of it.
And also, I think the reason I even brought that up is someone at the Hopin event said, I think it was Daphne, like, stop thinking about like what we do. She wasn't talking about us, but mm-hmm. stop thinking about what you do as having to come wholly from an events budget. This is actually partially going to come from your marketing budget, because you're creating video content that will be used in marketing and like all those pieces. Mm-hmm. That's what got me thinking about it the first time.
Yeah, for sure.
We are executing what the event team needs done, but we are creating and providing what the marketing team needs to take away, mm-hmm. which is why those budgets can get split. So like, even if we're not doing that marketing in the future, we still sit in the middle of all of this, right? In a way that doesn't really exist with a lot of stuff, where it's not, we do events mm-hmm. and we work with the event team, right? The point that Daphne was making that like, I think I didn't realize is we sit smack, even in the future when everything's in-house, we as the people who make the live digital thing, mm-hmm. are part team event and part team marketing. Does that make sense?
Yes. Okay. I think like maybe we'll get into some specifics that will help sort of tease out this line and what is and isn't in either of those worlds. Mm-hmm. I guess the thought just being that like, yeah, things are going to continue to change as they have for the past 3 months, every three months for the past two or three years. Yeah. Lots of changing always.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then that last sphere, the community building, mm-hmm. which is like, it was always inherent to live digital and marketing, if we're being honest, mm-hmm. That I feel like we've taken explicit interest in.
Yeah.
It's like, actually, we want to do more of that. We think that's important to all the other work that we're doing, to think about how communities are cultivated both on the internet and in person, beyond, outside of, and inclusive of live digital experiences and events. Mm-hmm. And it's not just a one-off thing. We've been saying that forever. And
right.
that feels so intrinsically connected to the concept of community, mm-hmm. and like, okay, these people continue to come back, they start interacting with each other, like those are sort of fundamental elements of a community.
It is interesting that because I have been thinking since the Hopin event about that place that we sit in between team marketing and team events, because I just didn't understand that about budgets, right? And then I heard her say that and I was like, oh, interesting. Like, that's really interesting. We split, like we serve both lords, you know, mm-hmm. of our clients. But then this community building piece has started to emerge on top of it, or in addition to, I guess, that I have found really interesting. I don't think it applies in the same way I've been thinking about like events and marketing, because a lot of companies don't have a explicit community building budget, you mm-hmm. know? So like, But I don't think that matters for the sake of just chatting more about what it means to be executing events, but also be creating marketing through those events just inherently because we're doing it on a video screen. Mm-hmm. And to your, what you just said, you know, building a community through that work.
Yeah. I wonder too. So like when I'm thinking about marketing teams now, and I actually traditionally think of events teams as being inside of marketing teams. So like, to Daphne's point, we're just going to attribute this to Daphne.
Yeah.
Seems like a thing.
From the Vendry, our friend's founder from the Vendry. She's amazing. She's
super smart. Yep. So that's why I'm like, she probably said this. She's really smart. Yeah. It's like, I see and I understand and respect the budgets as being separate, but that like events is often a part of a marketing team. It's a way to acquire new customers, which is kind of where I want to go with this. Mm. It's like community is the way that we're talking about it, I think has traditionally been captured by the concept of customer. Or audience or something like that. Mm-hmm, no, it's customer acquisition costs. Like, right, we're trying to get this person to subscribe to our product or to buy our bed or to whatever, all the other direct-to-consumer nonsense that exists right now.
I really had a second where I was like, are we selling beds now?
No, my brain just went to Casper.
Yeah, totally. I got it. It just took me a minute.
And like those people did kind of maybe by accident, maybe on purpose. Let's talk to the marketing team at Casper. Became a community, you know, especially the early versions of each of those products, like Casper. People who own a Casper are like, psh, yeah, I own a Casper. It's this new cool thing.
Yeah.
They send it to you. It's cheaper. It's really comfy. Oh my God, it's so comfy. Have you ever had a more comfy experience? They became almost cultish, and like that itself became a community. But at the time, I don't think Casper was thinking, we want to build a community.
Yeah.
They're thinking, we want to like get some people to buy some mattresses.
Yeah.
And to talk about them on the internet.
Yeah.
And to become like a marketing channel just through word of mouth. And so for like us to start thinking about that shift of like, oh, it's no longer just customers. Like every brand, every organization can think about it through the lens of community. Mm-hmm. And they're already like kind of there, but they can get somewhere different and somewhere further.
Yeah.
And I think specifically through the lens of live digital and the idea of bringing that community together.
Yep.
Like, cause that becomes the big difference is the Casper idea is like, those are individual people in isolation raving about their stupid mattresses.
And that's all aggregated by a hashtag.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a lot of isolation on the internet. That's brought together in some aggregated way, by a platform or something. Yeah. And so the shift from customer to community, I think comes at least partially when you're bringing those people together. This is where my Casper mattresses example falls apart because I don't think Casper mattress owners care to commune.
Yeah.
But that's okay. We'll leave them alone.
We really love going to the theater together. It's Casper mattress night at Phantom of the Opera.
Oh my God, that'd be really funny if they made like a, you know, those seat cushions that like old men bring to stadiums to like sit on?
Or Girl Scouts, we made sit-upons.
Sit-upons.
For camping.
Oh my God, what a wonderful term.
Oh, you never heard that?
No.
Oh, it's like you earned a badge for it. Sit-upons. It was newspaper with fabric on each side and we made them.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. So yeah, Casper starts making sit-upons and they have an event where all these people go.
I also take backseat. It's Casper night at the musical Once Upon a Mattress. Get it?
Nailing it.
Yeah.
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 We should do marketing.
Yeah. Okay, so actually, let me ask a question so we can follow this trail because I actually think this rolls into all of that. So we were just doing live digital, right? Like, oh, we're gonna do live digital. We know all these big things, and then we were like, oh shit, we're making events, you know, 2 years ago or whatever. We're doing like one night events, but as you said earlier, we were always trying to encourage people. This is a lifetime value of a customer thing. Like, do it more than once. But we didn't have like great framework other than like, we're smart, trust us, which is like not the most advisable business practice. It worked for a little bit.
It works. That's why people go to business school. It's basically that. Like, I'm smart, trust me.
Why publicly traded companies launch without a product?
Wow. Is there a specific company you have in mind that you want to blow up on this podcast?
Nope. Just was thinking about it since it came up yesterday.
Yeah. Dear audience, send in your favorite publicly traded company that launched and was monetized without a product. They exist.
So sad when we find out there's like everyone writes in. Okay. Anyway, we find out we're doing events, right? And they're live digital. And this might not actually be relevant to my question. I might have led us astray. But something I've been wanting to ask you is, you know how you frequently say, like, it's like what we're doing is a lot like the early days of social media.
For sure.
Okay. So in this event, marketing event is one circle, marketing is the other, and they kind of blend over to, and we are the middle of it world. I was thinking about like in our world, it used to be for a customer, random person in the universe finds a brand, likes that brand, is engaged by that brand on social media. Then you want to move them to an email. You want to get their email. That's like, right, next step from social media platform where you don't own your customer. Maybe there's some like little nitty gritty stuff in between. I'm like,
yeah, maybe know. Like a purchase in between, and then the email gets connected that way.
But just like how you're engaging that person specifically, like social media follower, email, so new subscriber, email, subscriber, customer, you know, audience, whatever it is. And so like in our world now, there's like a new step in between that that I think is really interesting. You have a social media person, you have an email subscriber, then they can come to an event, digital events like Smithsonian on a repeating basis. Mm-hmm. And you're doing double work in that step we've inserted, which is you're driving revenue from them and keeping them engaged at a deeper level than in the previous, you know, steps down that we just discussed, an email and a social media. So it makes a really nice funnel, and you start earning money earlier, right? In the best cases. It's not always true, and it's not always how people use this, but like, and so my question is, what was social media a new step in between back when it sort of emerged and everybody was like, the fuck is this? And what do I do with it? And I remember, I actually was remembering today with Pratima Skincare, which is this incredible plant-based Ayurvedic skincare line that I used to work for all the time and still sort of like help and advise. I remember in 2008, we got a social media agency, and we're like paying $10,000, and we're like, I don't even fucking know what you're doing. And I think maybe you're not even doing anything, and we don't know what's coming from the things you are doing for us as a business. Like, I remember that discussion. So
yeah,
that's all to say, do you have a feeling for what that new step was between?
Yes. Well, I don't know if I would categorize it as a step, but maybe we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
What is the steppiness of it? So I think about like, you know, we had web 1.0, web 2.0, now we're into web 3.0.
Yeah.
I don't know why I put the 0.0 on there. Nobody does that. Mm-mm. Web 1, 2, 3. Social media represented the, you know, shift from web 1 to web 2, and specifically like the networked effect, platforming, audience attention capturing social media thing. Mm-hmm. So it was like people coming to a singular place to exist on the internet, a la a Facebook or an Instagram, and brands and organizations and content makers and creators using those platforms and those network effects to capture the attention and get their stuff in front of those people. So like in web 1.0, it's like me literally going to a website. So it's like
website buyer, like nothing in between.
Yeah, it's like I have some buyer. Preconceived notion of a brand or of an organization, and I go to their website for a practical use case, mm-hmm. right? And so like, I already had that thought in my mind. I was already captured by that brand outside of the internet, right? Mm. I saw someone's Patagonia fleece and was like, I need that.
Oh,
and I was
yes.
like, where can I find that? I don't live near a Patagonia. Goes to the internet. Maybe I Google it, right? Or I just go to patagonia.com.
Uh-huh.
So that was like...
Was I supposed to laugh at you for that?
No, that was me buying myself time to figure out where I want to go next.
Okay.
So that's like a really poor distillation of like how the internet worked before, that's, you know, social media.
Pretty par for the course on this podcast.
Yeah, totally. But like the idea of catching and capturing someone's attention on the internet really only existed through the concept of like ads on search engines, like ads around the internet where I was already consuming. I go to Yahoo because that's where I go. I go to AOL because that's where I go.
Yep.
And those were sort of just information hubs, like, right? Very news oriented.
Yep.
Social media gave like this new opportunity for capturing people's attention. And like, I think very specifically about the invention of the newsfeed, which was like a Facebook specific thing in like 2008, maybe it came out.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, oh, I come to one place and there's just an infinite amount of content for me to consume.
Connecting you to other people. Like
other
that's
people,
the first...
Other brands, yeah, other things.
And sorry, I'm just going to pause there for people whose brains work slow on this, like me. So like in that old world that we're talking about, you could connect with other people through like a message board, but the network effect that you're talking about, the sort of like underlying algorithm that started bringing people to you in a way that was like more atmospheric than mm-hmm. the flat web message board sort of situation is a thing that was new, right?
Totally new.
Okay.
And so, yeah, so if you think about like, oh, I go to yahoo.com or AOL.com and like there's a limit to the types of ways I can interact with other people, interact with brands. I really can only interact through the lens of what AOL or Yahoo wants me to see, right? So it's going to be news things. It's going to be their advertisements and ads around all around the place. Mm-hmm. Maybe there was some concept of branded content at that time, i.e. like a story that was sponsored by Patagonia.
Yeah.
I don't think that was particularly prevalent back then, but I think it happened.
I love it.
But it was like a super rigid and limited experience for how I would discover things or consume things. And that like the newsfeed invention and that like sort of infinite scroll where all the things that I like could in theory be popping up. And I can have that which I loved on AOL, but that which I also got from Patagonia mm-hmm. when I went to their website directly. And so it's like all of a sudden the one place to come for everything that I want. Like mm-hmm. all my favorite people are here. All my favorite brands are here. All the news and stories that I want to find or read about or discover are here first. Mm-hmm. So I don't need to go anywhere else. All I have to do is go to Facebook. Mm-hmm. I go to Facebook and I scroll forever. Ties into the whole like addictive
yep.
sort of product design thing.
Yep.
That's for another time.
Yep.
So I think that is like the big change, right? It's like the capturing of attention. So all of a sudden that paired with like really good like pixeling and ad tracking around the internet and audience modeling of like, who are these people and what do you want to put in front of them? And how do you know what you want to put in front of them? The famous example being like, you go to Zappos and look at a pair of shoes and then that ad travels around with you for the rest of your life.
Yep. Yep.
Kind of that, but like, it got way better and Facebook like innovated so hard on this front. And like, that is why Facebook is so successful, is because of their ad targeting model and then their self-serve ad targeting portal.
Yep.
Facebook Ads Manager, if you haven't used it, is really good. Like, it's really good for reaching a really, really hyper-specific audience with a specific product and driving them to purchase it or convert in some way. So like that capturing the shift in the way that people consume information on the internet and then the ability to capture that audience through ads, I think is like the big change there. Mm-hmm. So instead of like, I mean, other forms of advertising were still valuable, out of home, television ads, things like that. But it became like the most efficient, best way next to like searching.
Yeah.
Which already has some intent behind it. You know, no one just like searches random. Take that back. People go to Google and type in random things all the time.
They do.
But all of a sudden you just like were confronted with things to either purchase or consume without having sought them out. Mm-hmm. And that feels like the big difference. It's like all of a sudden there's just things in front of me and I've learned this new behavior of scrolling a feed forever. And I'm just going to expect that things will show up in front of me and they will be more and more relevant to my interest the more and more I consume or like or follow or comment, engage in some way. And then all of a sudden I'm like, building quote unquote relationships with brands through purchasing things or following their pages or watching their videos or anything like that. And that's where like content to commerce, a concept that we've talked about, all of a sudden comes into play. Cause it's like, okay, human behavior on the internet has changed. They want content. They go to feeds for content. They just want to be entertained. They want to be distracted. They want to be happy. Mm-hmm. And so we have to make content. Red Bull explodes and becomes huge. Mm-hmm. This is a total aside now, but like Red Bull is an amazing like case study of a company because like they sell energy drinks, right? It's like sugar and water and like some other chemicals, but like they sold like a vision and an approach to life and an ethos and a feeling and like through the lens of all this weird and crazy and awesome content that they do. And like,
yeah.
I don't know. I think Red Bull's awesome.
Yeah. Like,
they make cool stuff and I never drink their product.
No.
And they're an extremely wealthy and successful company.
Yeah.
Content. So yeah, so I think that's the big social media innovation was the capturing of content and capturing of attention through news feeds to create direct relationships between consumers and brands and organizations and things like that.
Right. So when you start putting live digital next after that, the humans become a bit of the content and the design around how to connect all those humans and let them go wild and invent, you know, themselves, the magic of the gathering. Oh no.
Wow. Was that not on purpose?
No.
That was amazing.
No. Did you see me
yeah.
as I was saying it, realize it?
Magic the Gathering supposedly doing extremely well right now.
Oh my god, I used to drive my brother to the fucking comic book store to play Magic.
Yeah.
Anyway, you can design the technology that houses that is such that you get to learn a ton about those people and take all those learnings and insights and behaviors and use it to segment target. I was thinking about this a lot, maybe, which leads to my next question. It's not really a question, but I'm curious to know what you think about this. I was speaking with a COO, a female CEO of an app for runners and hikers and stuff like that. And we were just chatting about running businesses. What did you say the other day? The exhaustion of waking up every day and trying to figure out how to stay alive in a capitalist society. I think you said it better, but you get my... We were talking about that. And she said everything in their business is about getting better insights for better performing ads. The end. Like, the end. Even though, of course, this is actually an app about... guides and, you mm-hmm. know, being in the outdoors and all that, and shared knowledge between a community of people. And that made me think about what we do and how, like, how our data in some ways, our behavioral data, is more reliable than in-person events and more robust because you know every basically movement, step, behavior, mm-hmm. bounce, whatever, of someone at an event that's digital. And it made me think, of course, about the way we can design certain content to be available that tells us how someone probably likely wants to be segmented and targeted and all that stuff, and how, like, something like that for an app like hers would be huge, I think, because it's a community mm-hmm. already that cares about each other,
yeah,
and what they do, and her business, right, needs hyper specific targeted successful ads to stay alive.
Yeah. Oh, can we have just a brief moment to talk about how upsetting it is that a business that is designed on the backbone of a really interesting and fun community, right? Mm. People who like to hike and do outdoors things, but because of the medium through which they operate, which is an app and probably a website,
yeah,
like, their existence has to be boiled down to most efficient ads possible, because that's like the language and the currency of the yeah. medium that they're operating in, an app.
Yeah.
And so, like, I mean, it does matter how good the content is and yeah. how, like, high quality and how much value people get out of interacting with their product.
Yeah.
But none of that matters unless they get there.
Yeah.
And that's all ads.
Yeah.
So that's just, like, a little sad to me.
Agreed. Definitely.
And it's like, oh, are you starting a company on the internet? You are now an ad tech company. Goodbye.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's a little sad. Okay. Moment of silence for that. Moving on. But I like that idea of, okay, let's just assume for a second that the attention was captured via the ads, via the content for commerce, whatever, whatever, whatever. And now we're into this world of, okay, people are part of this community. They use this app. They're helping each other, learn about the different routes and mm-hmm. enjoy the outdoors. Mm-hmm. And so now we're into, like, retention territory,
mm-hmm.
captured attention. Now it's like, how do we keep people engaging and interacting? And I think that is the space that we play in. That's where we Definitely. Come in, right? Yeah. We can definitely help capture attention, but it's not what we do best. We're yeah. never going to do it better than, like, targeted advertising on the internet. That's it. The game has been won over there.
Yeah.
We're moving on. I mean, and retention is certainly, like, a huge topic of conversation, a huge issue for a lot of companies that are built on an attention model. Mm-hmm. You know, Netflix, what they care about is attaining new subscribers and retaining existing subscribers. Mm-hmm. Like, it's basically their entire business model. It's just, like, retention, retention, retention. And, like, all of these video on demand platforms think about that.
And making movies on the side. It's their trail guides, yeah. you know, version of trail guides. Except maybe not anymore. So
yeah. And so it's like, okay, what is amongst the things that people will continue to come back to an app for? And it's like, oh yeah, are there new features? Is it continuing to serve the purpose? Does my, you know, am I still hiking, right? I still need this thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that element of community is huge. And, like, I like that we have this hiking app because, like, the outdoors is such a large community.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, is community connected through to the quality of the app, right? Reviews and things like that, and some sort of, like, crowdsourced information that wouldn't otherwise be possible unless it was through that community. And I like that's where we come in. It's like, how do we get those people together to make it enjoyable to be part of that community?
Mm-hmm.
And to, like, I guess in the example of this app, keep them as paying customers of said app.
Yeah, and learn more about them and use those learnings of your existing customers probably mm-hmm. to inform your ads that are going and trying to find new customers, right?
Yeah, yeah, it like loops back around to yeah. capturing more attention. Mm-hmm. Like what
in theory, and the new content too, products. Right? The content yeah. you make for the gathering, the event, the experience.
Yeah, and like what
stories.
New features that the app mm-hmm. is, you know, going to have and what space to move into. It's like, oh, we're getting into mountain biking because all of our people are also mountain biking.
Yeah.
And like, that's a
yeah.
whole new group of people that we have yet to talk to or yet to capture.
Yeah, right. Well, oh, which were that interesting insight about live surveying disguised as fun polls and the stuff that we do is like really interesting. Also, by the way, I want to say, because I hadn't thought about it until I was listening to you just talk, one of the other projects we're working on that's community based, I was asking them, you know, I was like, if we're going to build this, I really want to just back it up into like a real cozy fundamentals of community building space to start with, which is, you know, conventionally there's a lot of different thoughts on this, but what you'll see over and over again is what highly explicit need connects everybody together. You have a community if you've got a highly explicit need, and you've got a community if people are helping each other. And I love that that's so clear with this hiking app, right? Mm-hmm. I need fucking trail maps so I don't get lost on the side of the mountain hiking down to Jalape because I can't fucking see anything but like hill, you know, any which way.
Where's Jalape?
Oh, in Hawaii. I was talking to the COO about my hike. I backpacked to Jalape Beach. That's not the name of the trail. I can't remember. It's a section of a really long trail in Hawaii, but it's beautiful. And she hadn't done it. And I was like, you should make a trail guide for that. But anyway, I have an explicit need, right? I have all trails because I have an explicit need to not the fuck get lost when I'm hiking, yeah. which as we all know is very likely because of a terrible sense of direction.
Yeah.
And the way all these apps are built, All Trails, this gal's company as well, allow that community to help each other. You can add to the trails. You can record your hike and at the on All Trails the recordings start informing the information. You can mm-hmm. leave reviews, like you said. Like that is so clear in those principles and fundamentals of community.
Now I just want to go hiking.
I know. I know. So we have a product. My company has a product. It is this app website that is guides. We have a community. This community has an explicit need. Already there. They help each other. Already there. We have a community. And we find new people through our ads. So what's the pitch for someone who's never fucking heard of Live Digital? Back to my Venn diagram. We go in the middle, you know, in the middle of all of that. And ostensibly, not that I talked to her about this, but like ostensibly, we could be incredibly useful for something that has community, a product, and needs to find new users and retain users, like you said. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think like, how does one explain to someone who's like, Live Digital, the fuck is that? Why they should add us in the middle or start to combine, you know, how we combine all this stuff together and become the glue for it.
Yeah. I like this hiking app example again, because it allows us to talk with like weird specifics mm-hmm. that like are relevant but irrelevant, but yeah. they're relevant.
Also, shout out to my friend who I hope you don't mind. We just used your company on this whole episode.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for existing.
We'll take you to dinner next month when you're here.
But I feel like the where my brain went to was, oh, they probably do in-person things, right? In-person mm-hmm. meetups, in-person hikes, in-person informal gatherings and get-togethers of sorts as community building tools and marketing tools. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, people who are part of the community, come together. That's nice. People who aren't part of the community, you should come together. Mm-hmm. There will be people who are part of the community that are experts that are whatever. We'll take you on walks.
Connect with friends.
Yeah, we'll talk to you or whatever.
Yeah.
We'll give things away. There's incentives to pull those people in. Those things are expensive and time consuming and difficult to put together. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that this hiking community is spread to every corner of the planet.
Right.
And so it's like, there's already the pathways for talking about this through the lens of, yeah, marketing, customer acquisition, community building, all those fun, good things. The Live Digital element is really just like an amplification of those other elements. So if we go back to our hiking example, it's like, what if you could engage with everyone everywhere and put on 100 of these events instead of just one of them, because they are like lower barrier to entry,
more affordable,
more affordable.
can include more people. Yeah,
more inclusive.
Yeah.
And like, you know, the structure, the design, the style of the event is going to be different. That's where we come in.
Yeah.
You know, thinking about that and thinking about how people interact with each other on the internet. It's different than on in real life.
Mm-hmm.
But it does allow you to reach more people in more places more quickly and cheaply,
mm-hmm.
in a way that is different and, I would argue, better than just Facebook ads, right? Facebook is the top of that funnel in my mind. It's like, hi, we're doing a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You follow us on the internet for some reason. You know, mm-hmm. you like our pretty pictures, but you have yet to subscribe. You've yet to be part of this community.
Mm-hmm.
We see you. You see us. Come be a part of this thing. Because it's live and it's digital, it's more engaging than just a social media ad or a video on the internet.
And you own it.
And you own it. But it's also lower cost, lower barrier to entry for that person because they don't have to live near New York City to get there. They don't have to travel to Bar Harbor to be part of it.
Like, right.
They can jump into it. And again, if that live digital experience is compelling, they will probably just try it, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's low barrier to entry.
There, you nothing lost. At the most, what, $25, mm-hmm. you know? Like,
yeah. And so I think one part of it is like, oh, there's some novelty there, right? It's not just another gear review video, or it's not just another person talking to camera, right? We're all a little used to that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've been watching those videos for 10 years now.
Mm-hmm.
But like human interaction and like live human experience, like, I feel like it doesn't get old as quickly.
Yeah, it's true.
We're all craving it a bit more right now.
Yeah.
And like, we have the sort of, we have the, like, the runway and the experience, and everyone's a little bit more used to it in such a way that I actually think brands can start doing it more frequently.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not just brands, organizations, artists, everywhere.
Yeah.
Can be like, hi, come meet me live on the internet.
Musicians are doing such a good job of that, right?
For a thing.
Right. Like, come up to my monthly Stage It show. And, you know, if you pay a little extra, you can like hang out with me or ask questions or whatever. You know, my friend Morgan James does that,
yeah.
and has never stopped since the pandemic.
Yeah. And it's great. And it doesn't need to supplant in-person things, right? You should keep doing those. You know, those are fun and good.
Mm-hmm.
But this allows you to do more different, better.
Mm-hmm.
Be more accessible to people who are, yeah, again, not just in major metropolitan areas or not next to that favorite mountain that y'all like.
Yeah.
And actually, yeah, reach those new people. I think the live digital thing is going to be more compelling for them to join or subscribe or whatever the sort of action is than just an impersonal video on the internet.
Yeah.
And then there's those benefits of them being sort of integrated into the community. Again, the live event will be explicitly geared towards making that a possibility, creating the space for that. and then, yeah, you're growing and adding to your community.
So it's almost like tell me if you think I'm super off base here, but what it made me think of listening to that was that, like, in the way that 10, 20 years ago, the 80s, I guess, really, the sort of like global major...
Well, the 80s were 40 years ago.
Yeah.
I just had to do that math in my head. And I was like,
whoa.
Wow, that's a long time ago.
I know. I realize I don't really know when this started, but I'm going to guess at the 80s now that I've said it out loud.
Sweet.
The corporate, like, global conglomerate, like, corporates became a global business.
Ah, yeah.
This live digital, in some ways, almost allows small, medium size and giant companies to become global businesses in a way you just couldn't do.
Ooh.
Because your audience can be anywhere. You can make money off of people everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's like, remember how, like, we've heard this a couple times over the last couple of years when we're working with a ton of nonprofits. They're just not interested in donors from overseas because it has not historically played out. Remember hearing that from
yeah.
a couple people?
Culturally, it's different.
Yeah. Like, all the oh,
U.S.
Yeah.
tax structure.
Oh, and when John Tomlinson told
yeah.
us about the cultural differences, it's so interesting.
Yeah.
But
it's
so
like, it's like tipping.
Yeah.
They're like, wait, you just why don't you just pay people living wages?
Yeah.
Why do you have
yeah,
to
dummies.
Tip them? I'm confused.
But in some ways, like for, let's take away now nonprofits and talk about for-profit businesses, like your hiking guide that maybe could have only been for, this isn't true of my friend, but like, I don't know, let's just say you made all the Denver guides, you know, back when it was only the printing press.
Mm-hmm.
Like you, this small business, small, medium-sized business can become a global brand
mm-hmm.
because you can create events that include everyone, experiences, because it's not events, it's experiences for communities, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I just thought about that too with like the Denver guides. It's like they could be part of like the tourism bureau and like getting like cultivating community outside of Denver and like bringing them to Denver.
Absolutely.
Very cool. I want to go to Denver.
Denver's cool.
It exists.
Yeah.
Is it one of those cities that like everyone is moving to across the past like 5 years?
Like, but one I feel of the like fastest growing all cities. Of the A1 cities are all like that. Kansas City, Nashville, you know, Denver, Austin.
What's an A1 city?
I think my friend made this up, but a summit. he used it for.
It's a term that someone made up.
I think it was. But a summit friend of mine was building a startup and was specifically moving into what he ended up labeling for like VC stuff, A1 cities. And those are Nashville, Austin, KC, you know, the like the next down from LA and New York.
It's like not the top 10.
Yeah.
A1 is such a nice way to say that and not like tier 2 or whatever.
Yeah. I thought it was smart and made his deck really like make a ton of sense.
Yeah.
Which is cool. Anyway.
Anywho.
Well, this has been really interesting. And I think like actually really clarifying if you're a person who's like us, you know, thinking about how if you love using the internet to bring people together, as Joe frequently reminds us, we have to have a business inside of that. And I think actually this was really clarifying and trying to start to really understand or take a guess at the next 3 month cycle of why people are going to do this.
Yeah, I hope people will get excited about this episode, put some things into practice. Everyone, every brand, every organization out there probably has a social media. They probably have some fans, followers, some community, the kindling of a community somewhere. Mm. And Live Digital is a way to take a next step with the people who raise their hand in that community or raise their hand amongst those followers and say, yeah, I like what you do. I want to be part of a thing. And you can get that spun up a little bit more easily than renting out the Javits Center or something.
This was an excellent Wednesday episode of the podcast. Thanks for joining us as ever.
And as always, the goal of this podcast is to bring people together. So share this with someone who wants to go hiking?
Yeah. Well, yes.
But maybe more importantly, wants to figure out how to incorporate Live Digital into their community building and community engagement structures.
I'm Jess.
And I'm Joe.
And we will see you back here next week.